As a reminder, at this time, we ask that you please stay seated during the speaker portion of the meeting as not to disturb those trying to hear a message. I would like to introduce our second speaker of the night, Jay.
All right. Hey, I'm Jay. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. I have a sobriety date. It's November 5th, 2021. I have a home group. It's Broward Young People's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a sponsor. And I introduce myself that way because that's the way that he introduces himself in meetings when he does talks. And, like, that's what I did when I came in to get sober. Like, I didn't do anything special. I didn't do anything different. I didn't try to, like, make my own recovery, you know. I just, like, kept my head down and took suggestions and did what he told me to do and developed a connection with God. And, like, that's why I'm standing up here today. I believe the only reason I'm standing up here today is because of, like, my faith in a higher power. I'm kind of introverted. I'm not one for big crowds, so this is, like, probably the most nervous that I've been, like, in sobriety, which I also think is, like, a good thing. But thank you guys for being so welcoming. The cookies are, like, freshly baked. This is kind of what we want Broward Young People's Group to be like. I'll disclose, you know, my story, like, how it tells me to do it in the book, basically, like, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I was born in Central Florida. Upbringing, like, childhood, I don't really remember much of, like, the early days. My mom also suffers from this disease. Maybe, like, she would be more appropriately categorized in our sister fellowship, but nonetheless, like, I was always kind of, like, around it, you know? Like, early memories, I remember, like, motel rooms, you know, staying with her and, like, whatever guy she was seeing at the time. I remember, like, going with her to these, like, houses and, like, waiting in the car and her going into the house, doing whatever she needed to do, like, to get whatever she needed to get, you know? And I didn't really think much of it at the time, you know? This is all kind of, like, hindsight stuff, but I was just kind of around doing my own thing. We would, like, she would get what she needed to get. We'd go dumpster diving. We'd get furniture. She'd have me, like, watch for cops while she'd hit the pipe. You know what I mean? Like, normal childhood stuff. Like, we all go through. So I was always, like, around that kind of stuff, you know? I wouldn't say that that my parents had split custody. I would just, like, go over to my dad's randomly. He was a painter. He painted, like, houses outside and stuff. I wasn't very supervised over there either, but it was, like, a little bit safer. I remember, like, my first, I guess, dabble with anything, like, mood or mind altering was, like, I was in, like, third or fourth grade. I'm not very great with timelines, but, like, third or fourth grade, he smoked Doral menthol cigarettes. I remember stealing one of his cigarettes, taking a lighter, and going into the woods, taking, like, a drag or two off of the cigarette, throwing up, getting real dizzy, and then, like, hiding the cigarette under a rock, and then, like, going back the next day, and then, like, doing that. And I don't think that's very, like, normal behavior. I don't know if it's, like, my circumstances at the time or what it was, but that's just what I did. I liked the way it made me feel. It was nothing too crazy, no, like, white light experience from it or anything, but I just kind of continued that kind of stuff, you know? In elementary school, like, I didn't really fit in. I didn't have many friends. I remember, like, doing things to try to, like, impress people so that I could be their friend. You know what I mean? Like, I would just do, like, ridiculous stuff, like, just embarrassing myself to try to, like, get an in. You know, I always felt a little out of place. I always felt, like, uncomfortable in my own skin. I just felt like, and anything I say that's, like, somewhat probably relatable or good is probably, like, something that I also heard another speaker say. I just want to disclose that. But, like, I always felt like that third friend, you know, if it was me and three other people, like, I was always off to the side a little bit. It was just, like, I didn't really know how to be a person. And so what happened, like, so my dad ended up passing away. And my mom, like, did what we do to cope, which is, you know, use substances, drink alcohol, whatever it is, like, to the extreme. So, like, she would be gone for longer periods at a time. she started like not bringing me with her. I would stay at the house. You know, I had this buddy that I would go to and hang out with on the weekends. He kind of had like a normal family. She sat me down. She knew like the direction she was headed. And she was just basically like, hey, maybe it's a good idea if you go and like live with them for a while I sort some things out, you know? And so that's what I did. I thought it was really cool at first. I was like, this is like a sleepover, like I do on the weekends, but it's just like all the time now. I wasn't really thinking anything of it, but I knew like I felt safe there. I also like did things, like I would sweep, I would mop, I would do their dishes. And they were like, what is this kid doing? Like, why is he's not like our slave, you know? But I felt like I owed that to them. So I got pulled out of school in sixth grade. And then when I moved in with them, I started like homeschool. And I didn't really like do any of the work. I was unsupervised with that. My mom like traveled a lot. My stepdad was like, he also used like substances, but like safer than my mom did. So I was just like unsupervised a lot, not doing any of the work, cheating on all the tests. So I like to say that I have a sixth grade education. I did, however, get my GED, so that counts for something. So my first time drinking was like 14, 15 years old. I was living in St. Augustine at the time, and we went down to Ocoee, Florida, which is like a small town near Orlando. You just kind of say Orlando so people understand where you're talking about. But I went down there with my adopted brother, and we spent time with his friend, and we got four locos, and we got like really drunk off of them, and then we all like cried about our dads for different reasons. Like, mine passed away, my brother's dad like left him, and then my brother's friend's dad like hit him a bunch. So we like cried about that. It was a beautiful moment. But like I remember like even at that young age, like looking back in hindsight, how amazing that Four Loko made me feel. You know, like I wasn't really, you don't drink Four Lokos for the taste. You know what I mean? Back then they used to have caffeine in them. I don't remember if it had caffeine in them. I don't think it really matters. It did the job, right? It made me feel like a person. There's a anime show called Naruto, and in that anime show, there's a scene where this character, Rock Lee, he like has this vest on that like weighs him down. You know, and in an episode, he's like fighting one of the guys and he needs to like unleash his full power. He takes the vest off, you know, and then he's like super light on his feet. And like the vest makes this huge explosion. And every time like I see that, that's a very accurate representation of like how it felt when I drank for the first time. And in feeling that way, like feeling like a regular person, like I could look the world in the eye, you know what I mean? Like I was at perfect peace and ease. I just made it a point, like I'm gonna do this as often as I can for like ever, for as long as I can, you know what I mean? When you're 15, you're not thinking of consequences. I also kind of thought it was like a little bit normal. So that's what I did. I drank as often as I could. That next morning I wanted to go back and get more Four Lokos, and my brother and my friend were like massive headaches, like they didn't want to drink. And like I was like all for it, you know. So that should have told you something there. So I continue like doing that as often as possible, doing non-conference approved dry goods as often as possible. You know, like the green stuff. My parents finally caught us. They said just do it like in the house. You know what I mean? So then I was like, oh great! Like I just have like the ability to do this whenever I want to. And then I got like really frustrated, really resentful at my brother because like we did chores and we like split the chores, and it was me doing dishes every week and it was like his turn, you know? And he would refuse to like do the dishes. I got really upset. I made a whole scene about it. My mom said like, if you just get a job, you don't have to do chores. So I got my first job at like 17, 18 working for Publix. First paycheck comes around and my mom wants like money for rent, and I'm like, no, like why? Like, I didn't have to do chores, but now I have to pay rent. And, you know, as selfish as I was, like, I needed that money to get what I needed to get to feel the way that I needed to feel. You know what I mean? I reluctantly gave her cash in the beginning, you know, at the start. When I got hired at Publix, it kind of reminded me of what high school might have been like. Everyone was kind of clicked up. Stock clerks hung out with the stock clerks, cashiers with the cashiers. But everybody kind of, like, came together at these Publix parties that people would throw. So I started going to them. I started having a lot of fun drinking. in the big book, I think it's in Bill's story, it talks about like how the drink is taking an important and exhilarating part in his life. And that was a case for me. I was living it up. I had no consequences. I was having a great time. Everybody liked me. I was fun to be around. And then, you know, it progressed. It went downhill. I started doing the white stuff so I could drink longer. I started, like, doing it at work. It wasn't just, like, a weekend thing anymore. I remember, like, getting it dropped off on my lunch break. We had hour-long lunch breaks. I would do it for an hour in the car on my lunch break. I would go back in. They're like, why is he taking so many bathroom breaks? You know, like, nobody has to pee this much. Eventually, it caught up with me, you know, like consequences and all that that we deal with, that I dealt with. So I guess there's something in the public's contract, or maybe there isn't. Either way, this happened. I no-called, no-showed for like 2 days. First of all, I was going in late every shift. I thought I was pretty good at my job, so I had a reason to be late because like they can't find somebody to replace me. You know, like just very like egotistical in the way like, oh, I have the best work ethic. You're not going to like find somebody to do the job that I do. I do the job of three people, you know. So I just kind of did what I want. They were getting pretty annoyed. I no-called, no-showed for 2 days. I left my bag there. They went through my bag and they found like empty residue baggies and cartridges. And they said, hey, you got to go and like you can't come back. Side note, I tried to apply to Publix in early sobriety and I'm on the do not hire list. So they really didn't like that. So I get like a few other odd jobs. Nothing sustainable. I worked at like a concrete shop, like a metal company. And then I got this job at a landscape company, like developing, like putting in trees and plants insulation in newly developed houses and like residential areas. And I worked my way up, you know, I started off as laborer to machine operator and then eventually foreman. And all the while, like this is happening, like I'm still living with my parents, you know, like I always held a job, but I never, at this point, like I'm not giving my mom any money for rent. My sisters are worried, you know, like my parents are like, where are you at? Like I would just come and go as I pleased, causing like a lot of pain, you know, my relationships were the same way. I remember like going into a psychosis, thinking my girlfriend was like out to get me and my roommates were trying to kill me. And it was just like not good, you know, like things were progressing pretty fast. So I get this job, I work my way up to foreman, and I can like clock people in and out on my phone. I have an app called Hindsight. So like you get me what you need to get me. We leave at 2 p.m. today. I'll leave you clocked in until 5. Like it was my relationships before Alcoholics Anonymous were all like transactional. What are you going to do for me? What can you get me? And then how can I help you with that? You know, it's I need to get what I need to get so I can feel the way that I need to feel. I did that for a while. I started like drinking in the mornings, and then I always needed to find like the perfect amount of each substance to like have a great day. And it was like I would drink in the morning and it would be a Smirnoff, and it was like that's orange juice, you know, and then I would eat a little breakfast and then take something to like help me through lunch, and then my back hurts, so I take another something that helps with my back, and then I get off of work and then I go hit up the guy like that I'm in debt with. Like every paycheck was just going to this person, and like I was always playing catch up, you know. And that's just like kind of how it was for a while. I remember like getting with this girl because like I eventually somehow moved out of my parents' house, and then the house I was in, like some of the roommates were leaving. I needed a place to go. I got with this girl because she had an apartment, and that's like not why you get with people. It did not work out. She told me not to bring things home. I brought things home. Now we're both like in this mess. We lose the apartment. Then I have to go back to my grandma's in the trailer park with like this girl, and she's 40 and I'm young and she has a kid, and I'm bringing all this to like my grandma, you know, because I know she'll be okay with it, or at least she'll say that she is. And then so yeah, we're all crammed up in this little trailer. I'm still continuing to live the way, if anything, it got worse there. There was like moonshine and other stuff going on, and like I was just like, it was progressing like fast at this point. So on April 19th, 2021, I got behind the wheel drunk, like not very uncommon for me, right? But the girl I was seeing at the time like was upsetting me, and I just had gotten this gun. And at my grandma's, like, we have, even though it's directed towards a school, it's still in code. So like we had like a little shooting range, and I wanted to like blow off some steam. So I go to the gun store, they're closed, I get upset, like, why are you closed? I need to get these bullets so I can shoot this gun so I can feel better. Like, I wasn't thinking of anything else but like myself. I get upset, I peel out into the main road, and I don't know if two cars hit me or if I hit two cars, but it was like a very bad accident happened. And I still wasn't like getting it, I wasn't understanding. I got sober in the age of social media, so I'm like videoing, I'm Snapchatting this and like telling people, please come help me before the cops come, get me out of here, you know, which resulted in my mom coming, and then, you know, my adopted mom, the person who like took me in like with open arms, you know, and I'm like doing this to her. Eventually I failed the field sobriety test. I was doing pretty good until the end, at least I like to think. I get put into the back of a cop car in handcuffs, family's watching. I'm still not understanding like the severity of what just happened. So I'm like cuffed in the back of the cop car, and then a big resentment of mine when I first came in was police officers. And this, so like I'm in the back of the cop car, and the cop runs a yellow light, and I proceed to tell the cop like, hey man, you just ran a yellow light. What are you, above the law? And he like paused for a second. He looks at me through the like rear view, and he's like, you know, I'm taking you to jail for like DUI and destruction of like, you damaged property and people. And I was like, oh shit, like maybe he has somewhat of a point. So I get booked. They take like the picture, and I thought it was a picture, so I should smile. So there's a mugshot of me like smiling somewhere, which I'm not proud about. The judge did not like that. Don't, if you ever go to jail, don't smile in your mugshot. It doesn't like look good when you go to court. So like all this happened, I knew I was gonna like be bailed out the next day. I got bailed out the next day. I like wanted to try a little bit, I guess, you know? So I tried to like control and moderate. I said, I'm just gonna stop drinking. So I did pretty good for 30 days. I bought non-alcoholic beer, and I took other substances and smoked myself into oblivion and convinced myself that this was working for me. Like I would literally drink 12 to 24 O'Doul's, like the non-alcoholic beers, and I heard that if you drank 13 of those beers in like a short amount of time, you'll feel something. So like I was trying to achieve that. I thought it was good. Like, hey, I don't have this problem. It's been 30 days. Let me go celebrate. So I Ubered to a buddy's house. I brought some moonshine with me. Proceeded to get blackout drunk. I called an Uber. I remember getting into the Uber, and I remember like telling the Uber driver, give me the aux cord, I'm gonna put you onto some music, like you have no idea. He seemed upset with me. We were in downtown St. Augustine, and I just remember walking around, and then I blacked out like completely. My buddy had to tell me this story, but apparently like a bicycle cop like stopped me. I was drunk in public. He asked me for ID, and I took my wallet out, and I just started throwing like every card that I had that wasn't my identification card at him, like aggressively, like, here you go. Pig, you know, whatever it was, probably being very rude. My buddy like took off. I just remember like 30 days after saying I'm not gonna drink again, and I woke up from a blackout in a jail cell, covered in like fluids, you know what I mean? Piss, vomit, I'm not sure, but it wasn't pretty. And you know, like the cop, he didn't arrest me, he just let me like sleep it off, which I'm grateful for. He could have held me till my court date. So I try to kind of manage and control this as best I can for, like, while I'm going to court, like, while this is happening. I got a public defender, and I told him, hey, man, like, I just don't want to go to jail. And he's like, all right, cool, like, I got you. And then I go see the judge, and the judge is like, hey, man, you got to do 30 days in jail. And then I said, well, I don't want to do that, you know? I don't want to go to jail. I told the guy I didn't want to go to jail. Now you're telling me I have to go to jail. And then they like talked and came up with like this thing of, okay, you need time served, so we'll your court order to like a detox treatment center, you can do your time there. And I figured like that's the easier, softer way, so let me take it. My insurance from my job was active on November 3rd. I went to treatment November 4th. My sobriety date is the 5th because like any good alcoholic, I got nice and loaded before I went in. And when I went to detox at Stepping Stones in Jacksonville, I remember they had H&I meetings. And these people were taking time out of their day to like come and share a message with me. And why I didn't, like, maybe I didn't relate to like all of their stories, you know, maybe I had a different upbringing. Maybe I drank a different beverage than they did or did a different substance. But I related to like how they felt without alcohol. I related to how they felt when they drank alcohol. Like it was their solution to a much bigger problem. And it really like piqued my interest. I didn't go to detox with the intentions of like finding Alcoholics Anonymous. But I did, and I'm so grateful for it. I do the 7 days there. I get transferred to a place in Hollywood, Florida called Compassions Behavioral Health. I do 30, 40 days there. I just started kind of like taking suggestions, you know? I don't know when or where this happened. I think it's just a matter of like God working in my life. But I remember having this bright idea to like do the stuff. Okay, like after treatment, I'm gonna set healthy boundaries with like people at my work and people that are around me. And I'm gonna like take a step back and I'm gonna say no if they try to offer me stuff. And I remember having a buddy like that I met in detox and in that treatment center. And he said, man, I've done this like 20 times. I've done what you're about to do. It's not gonna work. You need to get out. You need to go to halfway. And something in me just said like, okay, whatever. Like I still had my job, so I had to like call them and officially like quit. I get to halfway. I also had, there was somebody that came and brought meetings into Compassions. It was once a week through the Broward County Institutions Committee, which I'm a part of now and grateful to be a part of now because that one meeting a week that I had at Compassions like really saved my life, you know? So I get out and I remember going to my first meeting outside of treatment at the 12-step house in Fort Lauderdale. And the guy that brought meetings into Compassions was giving a one-year medallion to one of the guys he was working with. And I thought, hey, he was taking meetings like into my treatment center. He's giving away like a one-year medallion to some guy that he helps. Maybe that can be me, you know, maybe he can help me. What are the odds like that he's here? So I went up and asked him. He said, sure, you know, just start calling me every day. And so I like called him like maybe every other day, you know. The phone was heavy at first, but if you're new here and you have a hard time like picking it up, just don't, you know, like that was so important for me in early sobriety, was just like doing anything and everything to like get out of my comfort zone. He told me to call him every day. I did the best I could. I called him like maybe every other day. I remember like meeting people outside of meetings that every time, so we had like 3 halfway house meetings, and every night that I didn't have a halfway house meeting, I had somebody take time out of their day, come to my halfway house, pick me up, take me to a meeting. It's also like an honor and a privilege to be up here speaking at this meeting. I remember coming here in early sobriety and I got like bombarded and like 10 people gave me their numbers. I gave my, you know what I mean? And like the next, or I gave my number out to like 10 people. And then not only that, but the next day I received like a call or a text from literally every single one of them. So whatever you guys are doing here, like keep it up. It's really amazing stuff. You really made me feel welcome in the beginning. You know, I started going through the book. It was very important to have a sponsor, especially because like the language in the book is like very old, and he was able to kind of explain some things to me. You know, I don't want to get really in depth with the steps. What I will say is like when I got sober, I didn't really know what to expect. Like I was like, okay, I'll do the steps and then maybe I'll go back home and then like chill out and like control, you know, like I wasn't really all the way convinced that this is what I was gonna do. It was more like, let me get this, the cords off my back and then see what goes on. But something happened. I don't know what step I was on. I can't tell you like when it happened, but something happened where like I had a shift in my perspective. And I just remember, like, getting through the book and then being my sponsor being like, now you can, like, share it with other people, you know, pass it along. And I felt like this, like, overwhelming sense of gratitude. Like, now I'm in the position to be helpful to somebody else. Like, all those, like, all the people, like, taking time in early sobriety to help me out, and now I get to, like, do the same, you know, for another new alcoholic. And, you know, since that's kind of, like, that's been, like, my attitude. I don't work a perfect program. I'm supposed to live in 10, 11, and 12. A lot of the times I'm just living in 12. But you learn a lot about how important those steps are by not working them. You know, when I started taking people through the book, I think that's when I saw, or when other people saw the most growth in me. People started, like, enjoying my company. They liked being around me. It was very different to when I was a new guy. They were inviting me places. You know, we'd go out to fellowship and early sobriety, and they would, like, buy me food, and now I get to, like, do that for somebody else. When I got a year sober, my sponsor said, hey, man, come to the Broward County Institutions Committee and get a commitment. And I did that, you know, because, like, he knows better than I do. Like, when I stopped fighting and I was just like, okay, sure. Like, that's when the change started to happen. You know, I didn't really have, like, a religious upbringing. I had, like, no real God of my understanding. But the great thing about AA is that you can develop that over time. And for me, like, a lot of my faith can be measured in the amount of action that I'm taking in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when my sponsor told me to go to the BCIC meeting and get a commitment, I went to the BCIC meeting and I got a commitment. I just now, like, switched. I did the Salvation Army for, like, 2 years, a year and a half. I can't really remember. But in doing that, like, I got very comfortable with sharing. And then, like, these guys are in there for, like, 6 months, you know, and you develop these relationships with them. And a lot of them, like, come to my home group. I've yet to, like, the things that AA has given me, right? Like, I don't have a car yet. But guess what? Like, I paid off all my court fees, you know. I still have, like, liability insurance I'm paying off, but eventually that'll get paid off too, you know. I'll get a car when God sees it fit. I've always gotten to meetings. I've always made my commitment without a vehicle, you know what I mean? I get other people to meetings without a vehicle because I know people with cars, and I will bug them, you know, help this new guy. The importance of a home group, you know what I mean? I have this place where I go every week, these people that know me. And if I miss, like, one day, they're, like, texting me and they're asking me if I'm okay. More importantly, like, how I act at work and how I act, like, in my home life. Like, I have a great relationship with my family today. Like, this time last year, I my mom got diagnosed with cancer, my adopted mom. And she needed me up there, you know. And so I talked to my job. I talked to the halfway I was staying at the time. And I said, I need to take some time off. I got to go, like, show up for my family. And I was, like, able to do that. And that's only because of God and the 12 steps and because of you guys, you know. I was able to, like, drive my sisters to work. I just did mom stuff, you know. I was able to go anytime they need me up in St. Augustine. I can get a rental car and I can go up and see them. When I couldn't get a rental car, I would take a bus and I would go up and see them. Like, I didn't get sober to not have a relationship with my family. And, like, my relationship with other people is just the same. You know what I mean? When I get asked to speak, I say yes if I have nothing, you know, no prior engagements. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. You know what I mean? And so when somebody asks me to do something for AA, like, why would I say no? I don't really know what else to say. Michael said I could stop at 8:50, so I'll probably stop now. Thanks.